to us, and we would still issue that driver the ordinary type of document you see, except that where it says type on the license, it would say one, class one or class two or whatever it is. The certificate has not much significance once they come to us, except that they have to have it if they're going to get that class of license.
But it will be from someone that you have certified to give you that kind of a certificate because you know what kind of a program they have and what it contains.
Correct.
Okay. What happens, did I already ask this, if it's less than that number, then they would, what might happen?
Okay. Madam Chair, we're kind of talking about two different systems here. There's the, during the conversion system, we would accept the statements, the certifications from any companies, okay? But when for the original application, that is where we would set up certain criteria for the companies to be eligible to certify on the original ones. So during the conversion system, we would be accepting certificates from more employers than we would once we were completely converted in. If the person's been operating for them for 20 years,
okay.
We're not going to impose regulations requiring the employer to have X number of vehicles in order to do the certifying.
Okay, so if it's a smaller outfit and one of the things you would look at is someone who's been working for that outfit and for a number of years?
Correct. The person doing their training would have to have been with the company a certain number of years. The applicant who's coming in to present the certificate to us to get the class one or two license could be either employed that's going to work for the employer, could be presently employed by the employer, or could even have been an employee who worked for him in the past and has now maybe gone out on his own. He could get a certificate from an employer also.
What if someone comes into the state and doesn't have an employer with a vehicle to be tested on?
Okay, the applicant is going to be required to provide the vehicle if he isn't able to get the certificate from an employer. That's no different than our present requirements where the applicants for driver's license have to provide the vehicle.
Well, I know, but most people have their own car. Not everyone has access to what's in a Class 1.
Yeah, a large truck.
Yeah.
Okay, so they would have to either go to an employer who they plan to go to work for or who plans to hire them and have that employer certify them or borrow a vehicle or something like that. We aren't going to be providing the vehicles.
Is there a sort of a catch-22 with someone who comes in and doesn't have a job and doesn't have a license that one can take to get a job with? And do we have reciprocity if they're from another? I'm trying to figure out if they're caught in a bind.
Oh, Madam Chair, if they're coming in from another state and have a valid license from that state, and if it has a classified system, we would waive the drive test and accept the class license that they had. If we had, we would put them into a corresponding class. Not all the state's classification systems have the same classes, but if they had a class one which was comparable to our class one, we would switch them straight across.
How comparable would it have to be?
It would have to be the same types of vehicles.
Okay. Are most of the other states that have the classified systems broken down pretty much in the same way that this proposes to do?
Okay, our bordering states, California and Nevada, are pretty much like this.
What about
class
Washington?
Class 1, Washington has a different classified system than anyone else.
Than anyone else in the whole country?
Pretty much so. Theirs is, they have what they call an intermediate license and some other term escapes me now, but I think I could assure you that any states that have a class one, or at least their highest class of license, is for the same types of vehicles. And that's the large truck trailer rigs.
So anyone who's coming in from bordering states and is licensed in those might have either nothing classified or some sort of a classified system already. Well, I guess Idaho wouldn't have an awful lot of...
Yeah, Madam Chair, of the 31 states that have a classified system now, we would recognize their license and their class and convert the person directly into a comparable class that we have. For those other states that don't have a classified system, then they would be required to either present a certificate or take a drive test.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Sims.
Benita, your example, on the other hand, a bread salesman, Benita drives a bigger truck. What classification would he be under? He'd still be under a 4, wouldn't he? Which would be a passenger car.
Madam Chair, Senator Timms, that's correct. The only example I was using a bread truck for was to show that he doesn't have to have a chauffeur's license, but someone else who drives an exactly comparable vehicle does have to have, because he delivers goods or products. And as a matter of fact, they would both be in the Class 4. Right now, it's inconsistent.
Well, Class 4 is any vehicle except for a three-axle vehicle, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And exceed over 24,000 pounds.
Plus,
right?
Plus towing.
Madam.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure that I didn't confuse you. What I'm trying to say is that the panel driver who delivers parts and the truck or the bread salesman who sells bread should not be subject to different licenses just because one is paid to deliver goods and the other is a salesman. And we would propose that those would both have a Class 4 driver's license because they're driving essentially the same vehicle.
It doesn't matter who's paying them or not.
No.
It matters what they're driving. It's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. More questions? Okay, I interrupted you, Dennis. Why don't you go on to your next page?
Okay. In addition, drivers of Class 1 and Class 2 vehicles would have to have a medical certificate that has been issued within 2 years of when they are operating the vehicle. Okay, the physical and mental demands of driving vary greatly with the type of vehicle and the type of driving, and it is particularly important that drivers of large truck and trailer rigs and passenger carrying buses not have any conditions that might affect their ability to drive safely. The Motor Carrier Safety Regulations now have a medical certificate, but there's a lot of exemptions to the requirements for it. If a person's license now includes a motorcycle endorsement, and that's what we talked about earlier, the person will receive the appropriate class license with a Class 1 motorcycle endorsement in the conversion process. All persons renewing a license, regardless of the class received, will pay just a renewal fee when we convert over. And because of the Renew by Mail, the Driver License Extension Program, it will take 8 years to completely convert all drivers. We'll just convert them as they come into a field office to renew. Drivers will continue to drive with the present license until renewing, and they may drive any vehicle that they're presently allowed to drive with the type of license they have. Okay, the fees, with the classified license system.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Benita?
Before Dennis starts the fees, I have another piece of paper I'd like to pass out because this gets a little complicated.
Okay.
Looks like it also gets very expensive.
Okay. Whenever we discuss driver license fees, the subject is somewhat complicated because in addition to the, quote, driver license fees that were designed to cover our cost to provide the service, the total fee includes various fees dedicated to specific funds. For example, every original driver's license fee and every renewal driver's license fee includes $6, of which goes to special funds, $4 to the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund and $2 to the Student Driver Training Fund. In addition, we also collect money for the motorcycle safety subaccount on all licenses that are endorsed for motorcycle operation. These are all fees that we collect, but are not related to the driver license transaction. Okay, the fees proposed on Senate Bill 213 for original licenses, for a Class 1 license, Class 2, and Class 3, the fee would be $24. Presently, the fee for an original chauffeur's license is $10, of which we're proposing in another bill, House Bill 2178, to increase to $14 just to cover our present system. With the classified system and conducting, you know, more tests for these truck drivers that where we now conduct no tests, our costs would go up. And the $24 would cover our cost to provide that service. Okay, the Class 4 and the Class 5 license would be $19 plus the $6 for the funds for a total of $25. These fees are proposed.
Madam Chair, the fees that you see before you in every case are the fees that include the funds. So you need to subtract some money now and then if you actually see what our proposed fee is, but you're going to have to pay those fees because they're there as support for the funds.
So you have now arrived at figures to fill in the blanks on the page 46 of the amendment?
Yes, in section 31.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, the fund fees would only be collected on the Class 4 and Class 5 license. They would not be collected on the Class 1, 2, or 3 original license. Everyone would have to have a Class 4 license before they could apply for either a Class 1, 2, or 3. Okay, the endorsement fees.
No, wait a minute. Everyone has to have a Class 4 before they can apply for a 1 or a 2.
Yeah, at least to pass the test. They could get it all on the same day, but they'd have to take, you know.
Or they could come in and have a certificate and do the 4.
Correct.
Okay.
Or they could bring in an out-of-state license not take any tests.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, on the endorsements, the hazardous.
Senator Tim.
He interrupted right there. They could bring in an out-of-state license and not have to take any tests, even if they're from Idaho?
Madam Chair, Senator Tim, only if they were from one of the classified states. They could have the Class 4 test for the automobile waived, which we presently do if a person brings in a valid license.
Okay, then you say the answer is then if they come in from a state that's classified, they can get a...
Correct, they could get it with a Class 1, 2, or 3.
Not from the state of Idaho. Right?
Wait.
Correct.
I don't understand that. Have you... When I came here, which was a few years ago, I had to take a driver test.
Madam Chair.
Benita?
For a number of years, we have waived the driving portion of your test if you come to our state from another state with a valid driver license. That was an economy measure. But you still have to take the knowledge test and the vision test, and we still send in the little card to make sure that you've been a good person in the state you came from.
For how many years have you waived this?
About 10, I
believe. 10, about the same time that money became tight.
So what then you would be doing would be returning to the other...
Be no change,
yeah,
as far as if you came in here from a classified state.
No, I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't come in from a classified state such as Idaho, you'd be going back to the way you used to do it before you waived it then.
Correct. Madam Chair, only if you want a Class 1, 2, or 3. We would still give you a Class 4 with no tests.
If you came in from Idaho or Montana, I can't remember the states, with a regular driver permit or whatever, then you'd go ahead and give them a four and waive. Okay.
Correct.
Okay. You promise?
Okay. Trust us.
Okay, go ahead. We do have some other people that need to testify.
Okay, the endorsement fees, the hazardous materials and air brakes, those would be two new endorsements. The fee for them would be $10 to cover our cost. The motorcycle class
Wait. How are you going to handle? Did you say that and I missed it? How are you going to handle? Well, if somebody comes to you with a certificate from one of the trucking outfits, do you automatically put an air brake on?
If they have a air brake, if the certificate indicates they
that they have that experience.
Shown competency for air brakes, correct.
Okay, so then how do you... what do you do about the hazardous materials?
Okay, that would be just a written test covering safe handling practices, emergency procedures.
Okay.
The motorcycle endorsement.
Madam Chair.
Senator Simmons.
You mentioned air brakes. Do any Class 1 vehicles operate without air brakes?
Madam Chair, no. Senator Simmons, I can't think of any that may, but perhaps someone from the trucking industry would be able to better answer that question.
Well, there's several people here.
I question why the air brake endorsement needs to be on a Class 1 vehicle, because as far as I have observed, no vehicle that fits in that Class 1 category would not have air brakes.
Well, we'll hear from the people who own those vehicles. Okay?
Okay, the motorcycle endorsement, excuse me, the proposed fee there would be $25. That also includes the motorcycle safety subaccount fee, which is an increase from our present $12. But that's our present cost to provide to that test presently. And that fee is proposed also to be increased. Okay, some examples of the fees. If a person were applying for an original Class 1 license and the person has never had an Oregon license before, the fee would be $49. That would be $19 for the Class 4, plus $6 for the Motor Vehicle Accident Fund and Student Driver Training Fund, plus the $24 for the Class 1 license. And if the person wanted an air brake endorsement, the fee would be an additional $10. Okay, on renewal fees, we're proposing to just have one fee for all renewals, as it costs us no more to renew a Class 1 license than it does to renew a Class 4. Persons who presently have a chauffeur's license, combined driver chauffeurs, pay $18 to renew that. Our proposal would be just $13 for all renewals, and that includes the $6 for funds. So it's a $7 renewal fee plus $6 for the fund. Okay, the only endorsement that has a, quote, renewal fee is the motorcycle endorsement, and that fee is actually not a renewal fee, but the fee that goes to the motorcycle sub-account. Okay, this completes our overview of the proposed classified license system. If you like, we can go through briefly the bill itself. Each section.
Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. So let's not do that. Before we have testimony from the other people who are signed up, do you have more questions from the Motor Vehicles Division people?
Well,
Senator Frye.
Senator Brenham and I were just speculating.
You just discovered something?
Well, I was unaware that the current law exempted persons from having photographs on driver's license if they can provide good cause, including for religious reasons. And we were wondering what religious faith was opposed to having the picture taken.
Madam Chair, Senator Frye, we can tell you a number.
No. It's all news to me.
Indeed, that is why the language is put there. There are some groups who have religious objections to creation of any image.
Graven image.
And most states have similar exceptions because otherwise you get in serious trouble with the number of people.
What do you do?
Well, Madam Chair, they write letters to us. And
No. Thumbprint,
Madam Chair, description. We have a document that we issue that, as we do if you are in the military service and overseas, and you want to renew an Oregon driver's license, we issued a valid without photo, and that is printed right over the space where your picture would normally go. And, of course, we keep in file the exception as to why the photo is not there.
Okay. More questions? Okay, thanks very much. Next, I'd like to call all the people from the Trucking Association. Mr. Knight, do you want to? You don't want to come up. You want them to come up instead.
Madam Chair,
how do you want to orchestrate this?
I would prefer. I'm going to be here every time you have a meeting on this, and I will answer all your questions, and I will try to help you go through this bill. It has the support of the trucking industry. The concept it has. But we have three people here today who have worked for better than 2 years. In addition to that, Madam Chair, they spent the weekend with those 51 pages of amendments. And as long as they come down from Portland, I would prefer if they come up.
Okay, put your name on the... Did you say
I
that?
I gave my name.
I'm sorry.
I will say this, Madam Chair, that you asked me a question on Friday morning about the certification. And I believe that may be a weak spot in this bill. You're going to have to look towards people other than companies to certify these people. And I am not suggesting that the Teamster be one, but...
You mean in addition to?
In addition. You brought out in your questions, Madam Chair, that what happens to a person who comes in this state? He's looking for work. We do have commercial driver training schools.
Okay.
That may be a place that the state could delegate them to certify drivers.
Okay.
There are probably several of those schools. I know of one because they have participated in this also, commercial driver training in Portland.
Okay.
But I would prefer at least three gentlemen who have studied this.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Then I'll call Michael Meredith and Merle Royce and George Gantz up to... Give us their perspectives on this. Senator Frye?
We'll sit on the records between us kids. Is our session at 10 or 10:30?
10. Session's at 10 o'clock. So we have another bill, but we can... We don't have a... we have. It's only the Motor Vehicles Division has testified, has signed up to testify on that. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Good morning.
Please share with us your perspectives on the amendments to Senate Bill 213.
Madam Chair, I'll begin. My name is Michael Meredith. I'm managing director of the Oregon Trucking Association, located in Portland, Oregon. And I appreciate this opportunity to before you speak on Senate Bill 213. I apologize. I do not have any prepared statement that I can pass out to you. As Mr. Knight indicated, that we only had this weekend in which to read the amendments, so I didn't have a copy machine to prepare this for you. In a moment, you're going to hear from my colleagues, Mr. Merle Royce and Mr. George Gans, who will give you a carrier's point of view on this particular piece of legislation. But for the time being, I'd like to briefly review the position of our association with regards to professional driver licensing. We commend each of you for putting forth this legislation. We like the entire package, but for the most part, our comments will be directed toward those provisions having to do with Class 1 driver's licenses. This action brings Oregon in line with those of several other states in requiring special licensing for operators of commercial vehicles. The Oregon Trucking Association has advocated more realistic licensing standards for a number of years. We recognize, as you do, that accidents cost commercial vehicle operators millions of dollars in property damage, injuries, and death each year. And we also know that over 80% of all vehicle accidents are caused by human error, and a third of all drivers have two-thirds of all accidents. So we are especially in favor of any legislation that might screen out those individuals who might be the cause of some of these problems. We also know that companies in the trucking industry are desperately looking for ways to reduce operating costs and improve profitability, and that a significant contribution can be made by drivers who are safe, efficient, courteous, and professional. And of course, highway crowding, bigger trucks and smaller cars, and more vehicles traveling at the same speed have increased driving hazards and tensions. All of these reasons lead us to believe that tighter requirements for operating a commercial vehicle license can positively lead toward greater safety and efficiency on the part of professional truck drivers. In fact, when we met with representatives of the Motor Vehicles Division several months ago, we asked them to propose even tighter requirements than I believe they are offering here. Anything less than a total commitment on their part will amount to just another meaningless regulation easily side-skirted by the less scrupulous operator. This concept is not something new to us. We've given long, hard thought to what minimum performance standards ought to exist in the trucking industry. In 1981, our Council of Safety Supervisors set about to develop such standards for truck driver certification. The committee was composed of representatives of for-hire and private trucking operations, regulator agencies, Teamsters, and driver training institutions. It took over 18 months to develop these minimum standards, so I can assure you they are definitely well thought out. Our primary interest here, therefore, is to see that not only does the Motor Vehicle Division adopt nothing less than these standards when it considers rules for licensing of drivers, but that some of the mistakes in the present system of regulating driver performance not be repeated. Mr. Royce from Georgia Pacific Corporation will go into greater detail about the abuses we see in the present regulations that are supposedly designed to ensure professional driver performance. Mr. Gans from Mellow Truck Express will explain why the standards we've prepared are superior to what presently exist, and if you'll allow me, after their testimony, I'd like to come back with some brief recommendations that the Oregon Trucking Association has.
Okay, go ahead. Just give your name as you start so that it's on the tape for our records.
Madam Chair, Senators, my name is Merle Royce. I'm with Georgia Pacific Corporation. I would like to offer some folders that you could follow through.
Okay, our wonderful page will bring them.
What your assistant is distributing is a packet regarding the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Regulation requirements for Class 1 drivers. What I would like to identify or help you to identify are the problems, as we see it, with those requirements. The requirements are good. I'm not meaning to kick the requirements, but the procedures for compliance are where I feel the industry and enforcement is failing. For example, the easiest way to refer to it would be go right down the front of that jacket, and then each insert inside the jacket is a form my company has designed to be in compliance. The first requirement is an application for employment. Pretty standard application. However, a couple of government agencies are in conflict over questions you may ask on that application. So the second item is what we call a driver supplement, and that supposedly bypasses the first problems and complies with what the Department of Transportation requires you to, the questions they require you to ask. Next is a driver's road test, and the format for the driver's road test is very well spelled out in the regulations, and a form similar to the one you're looking at will pass or meet all requirements. The problem of it is it does not identify who is to administer that test. And in a case of a owner-operator or a self-employed individual, he may take the test himself and certify himself as a qualified driver. And no one really supervises whether or not he administered the test. The next item, or the other problem with that, is that once a test has been administered. For example, if I were an individual, I gave my own test to myself, signed my card that I was certified, then I could use that as an introduction to anyone in the industry without having it redone. The next item is a written knowledge test. I'd like to call to your attention that is not a...
Hang on just a minute, Mr. Royce. Can you... Let's see. You're saying that the bill doesn't say who's to test?
Excuse me. Yeah. No, I'm talking about federal market carrier safety regulation.
Okay.
What I'm trying to exemplify is we've got some fairly good standards here, but the problem is compliance or monitoring compliance.
Okay.
And this is on a federal level. And hopefully exciting your committee to put some teeth into the compliance structure.
Okay, thanks. Go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted.
It's all right. The next item is a written knowledge test, which is also in the standards we're recommending. But in this case, the written knowledge test is not a pass-fail test. There's anywhere from 25 to 70 questions or more if a company wants. But the applicant or person seeking the authority is not required to pass the test. And also in that case, the person may certify himself if he is a self-employed operator.